Last week, we finished our summer series in the book of Jonah, but we are continuing with the theme of compassion. So the theme of Jonah was God's great compassion and how God was inviting Jonah to take on the same heart attitude of compassion and be willing to extend it to his enemy, to Nineveh, and through God inviting Jonah to share his compassion, he was also inviting us to share his compassion. And so we're sticking with that theme for the next couple weeks. And we're doing this by returning to where we actually began 2 years ago. 2 years ago, when we had our very first Sunday morning service, we looked at Luke chapter 10 and the parable of the Good Samaritan. And we are going to revisit for the next 2 weeks the parable of the Good Samaritan, and this is pretty directly connected to our coming season at Connection Point, and so this is going to be very timely for us. Turn with me in your Bibles, or tap there on your devices, or access your photographic memory, however you want to do this, to Luke chapter 10, and we're going to look at verses 25 through 37. Luke writes, "And behold, a lawyer stood up to put Jesus to the test, saying, 'Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?' And he said to him, 'What's written in the law? How do you read it?' And he, the lawyer, answered, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and your neighbor as yourself.' And Jesus said to him, 'You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live.' But the lawyer, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, 'And who is my neighbor?' And Jesus replied, 'A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. Now, by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take care of him. And whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back.' Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" And the lawyer said, "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus said to him, "You go and do likewise." I've shared with some of you a story of one of the, I guess, most transformational experiences in my life where God really set a new trajectory for me. This was in the first part of 2015. I was driving in my car, caught up in the whirlwind of being a campus pastor for True Hope. And out of the blue, I felt like the Holy Spirit just whispered a thought to my heart that ended up thundering in my spirit. And he said, "Barry, you act like you care, and you want to be perceived as one who cares, but you don't really care." And it was a rebuke. It was also an invitation, but God was showing me something about myself, and he was actually saying, "This is a deal breaker if you're going to continue into the calling of pastor that I have for you." I was so caught up in the whirlwind of True Hope. I'd come out of the season with our daughter and leukemia, and in those moments when people around me were hurting or people around me had needs, I was doing the bare minimum so that I would look good as a pastor. But I wasn't really taking the time to be there and care. In fact, I remember one young man had a grandparent who had passed away, and he sent out a text to the music team and ended up texting him back, like, oh, I'm really sorry that happened. I'll pray for you. And first off, I didn't pray for him. Forgot. And then I found out later how hard it was for him that his pastor couldn't even find the time to make a phone call. But this was my life at the time. I needed him to think I cared. It's a group text, so everyone needed to know, okay, the pastor's responded and the pastor's praying. But inside, I was too busy. Inside, I was caught up with stuff that was going on in my own family, which is important. I was caught up with being a pastor and doing all the programs and practical things at a church, which are important. But I was very similar to this priest and to this Levite who saw a body, and they made a little cross. I probably did this wrong. I'm not Catholic. I don't know which way I'm supposed to go. As they walked by and said a prayer, but they just moved on. They weren't the ones that were showing compassion, and God was making it very clear to me, Barry, this is not okay. This is not okay for you to be a pastor and live this way. The trajectory of your life needs to change. And he was showing me something. Compassion matters to God. And I want you to hear me this morning. This matters to God. It really matters to God. Compassion. And so from that day forward, I have sought to regularly ask myself the question, am I really caring right now, or am I just passing by? And actually, this week, I felt convicted all over again as I was returning to this. Like, oh man, I haven't been asking that question as regularly in my life. Am I really caring right now, or am I just passing by? And God immediately brought a couple situations to my mind. I'm like, man, I've just been passing by. See, we live on the Jericho Road. And it's all too easy for us to become the priest. It's all too easy for us to become the Levite and to really avoid closely examining the need. It's easy to be that person who we act like we care. We might smile as we step over the body, and we might wave and say, nice to see you. But in the end, we don't really care. We act like we care. We want to be perceived as one who cares, because we want everyone to know that we're a good Christian and we love, but deep down, we're not really caring. I'm reminded of the commercial. It says, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And actually, that's a pretty good definition of a neighbor. Jesus is talking about a neighbor, and a good neighbor is there for their neighbors. And if there's one big takeaway for the next couple weeks, that's it. A good neighbor is there for their neighbors. To care is to be there. To show compassion is to be there. A good neighbor cares for their neighbor. And you say, Barry, you're using neighbor in a bunch of different ways. I'm getting a little bit confused. Is Jesus saying that you're supposed to love the neighbor? Or is Jesus saying that you're supposed to be the neighbor? In other words, the question is the neighbor the wounded man? Because the lawyer said, who is my neighbor? And Jesus told the story about the wounded man. Or is the neighbor the Samaritan? Because Jesus told the lawyer afterwards, you go and do likewise. Is the neighbor the wounded man, or is the neighbor the Samaritan? And the answer is yes. Yes. We are called to both be a good neighbor, and those around us are neighbors. And Jesus is making sure the lawyer understands this idea of neighbor is big and comprehensive, because likely the lawyer was trying to create a distinction in asking this question. Well, who's my neighbor? Arguing that certain people were neighbors, but other people weren't neighbors. After all, Jesus had to address this attitude. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor, but hate your enemy. So, you know, some people it's okay to hate, but who's my neighbor that I need to love? And Jesus is saying, actually, that's not true, that you love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Your enemy is your neighbor. And the way he tells the story lets us know that enemies are also neighbors. But some of the Jews limited this idea of who is my neighbor just to fellow Jews. This is what some of the rabbis were teaching, in fact. some of the rabbis went so far as to make it illegal for a Jew to help a Gentile woman in childbirth because that was helping bring another Gentile into the world. And so Jesus here is speaking against this, and we see that he's not putting any limit on this idea of neighbor. And so the question I'd like to look at this morning is this idea of who is my neighbor? So if the main takeaway is that a good neighbor is there for their neighbors, the question for this morning is, so who is it that I'm supposed to be there for? Who is it that's my neighbor? Next week, we'll talk about be there how. What's it look like to be there for my neighbor? But this week, we're mostly going to talk about who is my neighbor? Who's the person that I should be there for? And I'm going to give you four characteristics of the neighbor who needs a neighbor. Four characteristics of the neighbor who needs a neighbor, and you are both neighbors at various times. Sometimes you are the neighbor called to help someone, and sometimes you are the neighbor that's in need of help from another good neighbor. So as we go through this, I don't want to think top down, like, oh, we're the giving, generous people, and who are the broken people that really need me? No, we are all both sides of this neighbor thing. And so we're going to talk about four characteristics of the neighbor who needs a neighbor, and you will find yourself on both sides of this at various times in your life. First characteristic, the antagonistic neighbor needs a neighbor. And you say, Barry, where does it say antagonistic in the text? I thought we preached the Bible. Well, in verse 33, Jesus introduces this character of the Samaritan. And for the Jews who were listening, this would have immediately imported antagonism into the story. Because when the nation of Assyria had moved colonists into Samaria, some of the Jews who were left there intermarried with these non-Jewish colonists, and they became a separate community. So they were no longer full-blooded Jews. And these people kind of grabbed some things religiously from the Jews, but they also grabbed some things from the false religions of the day, and they built this rival temple on Mount Gerizim, and they dedicated it to Jupiter, but both the Samaritans and the Jews looked to Abraham as their father, and they both said that they were the rightful heirs of these promises that had been made to Abraham, and both of them claimed that the land was rightfully theirs. And this led to all kinds of antagonism. And so by the time of Christ, there had been hatred and hostility between Jews and Samaritans for hundreds of years. In fact, it was bad enough that when Jews had to pass through Samaritan territory on their way to a religious feast, Samaritans frequently would refuse them shelter. And sometimes they would seek to hurt them or seek to hinder them. And so as soon as Jesus mentions a Samaritan, there's some immediate understanding of, oh, there's antagonism between Jews and Samaritans. And it's really interesting how Jesus tells the story. Because you would think that he would make this lawyer, and so we think lawyer and we think legal in our sense, and that was partly true, but a lawyer was someone who understood how to interpret Jewish law, which is mostly Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. So this was an expert in the Hebrew scriptures, and you would think that Jesus would make the lawyer the hero. Oh, your neighbor is even that wounded, broken Samaritan, and aren't you amazing that you'll be nice even to your enemy? But that's not how Jesus tells the story. And I'm sure this probably rankled the lawyer, because Jesus makes the good guys the bad guys. The Levite and the priest, the good guys, the Jewish heroes, they just walked by. And then Jesus makes the villain the hero. The Samaritan's the villain. And Jesus tells the story in such a way that the Samaritan is the hero. In fact, this Samaritan had so much compassion that he helped a Jew that even other Jews were ignoring. And Jesus is making something very clear. The antagonistic neighbor needs a neighbor. Even the Samaritan, even between Samaritans and Jews, there should be this sense of neighbor. And so we need to ask ourselves the question, when it comes to those in our life who are antagonistic, are we really caring or are we just passing by? You may need to stop for a moment and think, where do you experience antagonism? And maybe it's people who have different perspectives on politics than you, different perspectives on LGBT than you, different perspectives on religion than you do, different perspectives on abortion than you do. Or maybe it's just someone, you just don't like them, or they just don't like you. And it's not any of those reasons. It's just there's just tension. I think Jesus would be saying, even that person is the neighbor towards whom you should go and do likewise. And just one little caveat here when we think about where we extend compassion, how we extend it. Notice that the Samaritan didn't say, okay, you're a Jew. We believe something different. I'll help you, but you like need to come to our temple and check out what we're doing. Like there was no strings attached to his help. He helped the guy. No conversion was required. The antagonistic neighbor needs a neighbor. Second characteristic of the neighbor who needs a neighbor, the broke neighbor needs a neighbor. When I say broke, I'm talking about financially broke. We see in verse 30 that this man fell among robbers and they stripped him, so he lost his clothing. And then the Samaritan comes and he sets him on his own animal, brings him to an inn, and he takes care of him and he pays his own money. Because this guy doesn't have any money. He's been robbed. He lost everything. And the Samaritan says, take care of him, and whatever it costs, I'll repay you when I come back. This guy is broke. And I'm going to share a couple statistics with you, and I didn't update these since a couple years ago, so they're not probably up quite up to date, but they're close enough to make the point that I'm trying to make. And the stats say this: 1 out of every 7 North Americans is poor. 1 out of 7. The poverty level for a family of 4 is $24,600 or less, probably slightly higher in the couple years since, but pretty close to that. And 1 out of every 7 North Americans is living somewhere where they are below that poverty line as a family. And you might be surprised who these poor are. 1 out of 3 are children. 1 out of 3 of the poor are children. Actually, 1 child in 4 grows up in poverty. Did you know that 40% of the homeless are children? 40% of the homeless are children. 1 out of 6 of the poor are those who are elderly, those who are mentally disabled, physically disabled. And 1 out of 3 of those who are poor, they're working, but they don't make enough to be able to lift them out of poverty. So we tend to think of the poor and we tend to think of people who have caused their own problems, but 5 out of 6 of the poor are not in that situation. Actually, only 1 out of 6 of the poor in America are the controversial poor, those who are just lazy. They just don't want to work, or those who maybe caused their own problems through substance abuse or other poor choices. Most of the poor have just had hard things happen in life, and they would like for there to be a change, and they're willing to work for there to be a change, but it's just not working out for them. There's this myth that poor people are poor because they won't work. But that's not true. So a single mom making minimum wage could work full-time and just barely be above the poverty line. And some people want to work, but they can't work. There's a book I'm going to recommend later called Ministries of Mercy by Timothy Keller. And he writes about Kathy, who is a Jewish homemaker living a normal middle-class life. So this is Karina. Think Karina. You're not Jewish, but Jewish homemaker living a normal middle-class life. But put ourselves into this scenario and understand how this could become us if the right things happen. When her son was killed in an accident, her husband took to drinking and withdrew from her. Brandon, it's not good. He divorced her and she was left alone at age 43 with no job skills, no job history. I guess this doesn't really apply to them. I'm sorry I brought them into this. She was left alone at age 43 with no job skills, no job history, and no alimony. Her state had a no-fault divorce law. Her husband recovered from his alcoholism, remarried, and was soon making $65,000 a year. She began working as a waitress for $900 a month. She could not pay the rent on her one-bedroom apartment and still eat. She began drinking, and sought a psychiatrist who did little more than prescribe tranquilizers. She began living in welfare hotels and now is in a rehabilitation center for indigent women. Not a controversial poor. A tragedy happened, and she found herself in a situation. Many of the poor have just had hard things happen. And so we need to ask ourselves, when it comes to these broke neighbors who need neighbors, are we really caring, or are we just passing by? Are we making excuses? Like, that's probably their own fault. Are we making excuses so that we can pass by? And people are broke for many reasons. We experienced a season of being broke when our daughter went on her cancer journey, and my wife had to quit her job, and it was just all these unexpected trips and expenses. And fortunately, we had really good neighbors. We had two different churches. I had just finished pastoring at a church in Kansas City. I'd moved to Spokane, and I was 6 months into pastoring a church in Spokane, and both churches kind of still viewed me as their pastor. And so the Kansas City church had a lot of money, so they airmailed checks in. And then the True Hope was mostly college students. They had no money, but they had a lot of time. And so they would come, and they were kind of the ground forces helping us do battle here in Spokane. But we had good neighbors that carried us through that season, or else it would have wrecked us. Medical expenses can cause people to be broke. Sometimes people are in between jobs or starting a new job or starting a new business, and it can take months before your income catches up. People sometimes are in emergency crisis. I'll be sharing the story, and I've shared it in the past in September when we tell the story of our church during our two-year celebration. When Angel and I were robbed, We'd lost our car, and we were going to buy a new one, and then we were robbed, and that would have been a really hard situation for us, but we had good neighbors. We actually literally had a neighbor that came and gave us some money. We had a family here at Connection Point that helped. We had a pastor that heard what was happening and jumped in, and a couple other churches helped out as well, and the broke need those kind of neighbors, and that's good. We're called to be those kind of neighbors. Sometimes people are broke because they're going to school. Our college students mostly aren't here right now. But it's hard to work full-time and go to school, and sometimes you just can't do it. Broken families can cause financial difficulty, whether it's divorce, or we had a friend in Kansas City, and their daughter had made poor choices, and so they took in the grandkids and raised them as their own, and that caused all sorts of financial implications. And sometimes people are broke because they've caused their own problems. Sometimes people are broke because they've caused their own problems. We'll talk a little bit more about this next week, but that doesn't mean they don't get mercy. If mercy only goes to the deserved, is it even mercy anymore? Isn't mercy something that's given to the undeserving? So the broke neighbor needs a neighbor, and we got to ask ourselves, are we really caring, or are we just passing by? Third characteristic, the wounded neighbor needs a neighbor. We read in verse 30 that the robbers beat this man and departed, leaving him half dead. And so the Samaritan went to him, and verse 34, bound up his wounds, poured on oil and wine. That would have been kind of a medical treatment of the day. So this man is wounded, and he's not only wounded physically. That's all we see in the story. But when you've gone through that kind of an attack, when you've gone through that kind of physical trauma, you're also wounded emotionally. And sometimes that's a harder wounding to heal from. So here's a man who's wounded physically and probably also emotionally. And so we need to ask ourselves, we're surrounded by wounded people. Are we caring, or are we just passing by? Who do you know who is injured? Who do you know who maybe actually has been abused? Who do you know who's disabled? Who do you know who's sick? Sometimes it's a temporary wounding. And then there's also this emotional scarring. And there's many, many people emotionally hurting. They've been abused. They've been violated. They've been betrayed. The wounded neighbor needs a neighbor. Lastly, the alone neighbor needs a neighbor. The broke neighbor needs a neighbor. The wounded neighbor needs a neighbor. The antagonistic neighbor needs a neighbor. And then the alone neighbor needs a neighbor. So this man is in no man's land in between Jerusalem and Jericho. It's a dangerous stretch of territory that descends, and there's all sorts of curves and and rocks where thieves could hide out. And it was known to be, it was a notorious stretch of road. And so he's there in no man's land. And the robbers, says in verse 30, they departed, leaving him half dead. And the priest and the Levite came, but they passed by on the other side. Sometimes you can be alone even in the midst of a crowd. Sometimes you can be alone even when people are around. So this guy is alone. And so we need to be asking ourselves, who in our life, who in our own church? These people are sitting in our midst. A number of you I'm talking to, yes, you're called to be a good neighbor, but we also have a number of people here who need neighbors, and they're sitting in our midst. And we just have to ask, are we really caring for our own? Are we really caring for others in our community, or are we just passing by? And sometimes the people that are lonely might not immediately look lonely, but the single parent can find themselves in a very lonely situation. The divorced person can find themselves, or the widowed person can find themselves in a very lonely situation. Elderly people can find themselves in lonely situations. And sometimes the most lonely are the people who are just a little bit different. Just a little bit different. Maybe they're awkward to be around. They don't see life quite the same way. And you know who I'm talking about. They're alone. And the alone neighbor needs a neighbor. And we have to ask ourselves, are we really caring, or are we passing by? I'm going to read a paragraph from this book called Ministries of Mercy. And I think it would help our church if a number of us read this. I don't have copies to give away. It's like $13 on Amazon. It's called Ministries of Mercy by Timothy Keller, The Call of the Jericho Road. And when a church has compassion ministries arise, the churches that do this best, it arises not, it's not a top-down thing. It's something that happens bottom-up. The leaders devote themselves to teaching the word, casting vision for it, supporting this. But these ministry mercies, when they happen best, they arise from the people of the church. And this is just a fantastic book. And so if you read, or if you're willing to read, get this book. It will help us. But on page 136, I'm just going to read a paragraph. Do you really stop, look, and listen in the middle of your church and neighborhood? If you do, you will notice a multitude of needs. There's a college student who has had to drop out of school for lack of funds. Over here, there are numbers of elderly folk without sufficient support from children who need transportation, friendship, and other aid. Turn in another direction and listen hard. You will hear single parents, divorced and widowed people, struggling financially and emotionally to be both mother and father to children. They often don't seem all that poor and threadbare to the eye, but a sensitive ear will hear the anguish. Now, see the families temporarily in need because a mother or father is sick or injured. Other families struggle under more permanent disabilities. One has a mentally challenged child. Another has a father forced to retire early due to a severe back ailment. Another family has a mother with Alzheimer's disease. Then there are the terminally ill, families struck by cancer, leukemia, and other such maladies. Many personal problems that are more obvious in urban areas remain hidden in the suburbs. There is the alcoholics or drug addicts, unwed mothers, abused children, juvenile delinquents, and ex-convicts trying to re-enter society. My goal today is to get us thinking and becoming aware, who is it that's lying on the side of the road next to us? And are we really caring, or are we just passing by? And there's a lot of reasons that we might pass by. And the first reason sometimes is that we're unaware. And that's why I have structured this first message the way that I have, is to create some awareness of the people who need neighbors. But then once we become aware, there are other reasons that can also keep us from getting involved. And sometimes it's because we're too busy. Too busy. The whirlwind of being a pastor had caused me to be too busy. The whirlwind of my own family having needs had caused me to be too busy. And you'd think that those are good enough reasons. But the Lord was making it clear to me, hey, just because I need help from others doesn't mean that I don't myself need to be a good neighbor. Busyness. So with me and God, the way I was living my life, it wasn't a good enough reason. And I'm not saying you guys are all in the exact same situation I am. I'm just asking you to ask questions. Is busyness inappropriately keeping you from really caring? Sometimes we just don't care because we're selfish. Straight up, not interested, selfish. Sometimes we're afraid. Some of these are really hard situations to step into, and we don't know exactly what to do. We'll talk a little bit more about that next week. Sometimes it's because we're tired. Sometimes we pass by because it's hard. It's hard. Certain ministries of compassion are fun to be involved in, and you feel like you can make a big difference really easily. But many of these are very difficult, and the fruit takes a long time to come, if it ever comes, and there's no praise, and you're behind the scenes, and no one knows what's going on. It can be very difficult. Sometimes we pass by because inside we're thinking, hey, I'm the one who's the needy neighbor. They need to be a good neighbor to me. And so we ourselves all of a sudden stop being a good neighbor because we are looking to experience good neighbors ourselves. And then sometimes we just think, well, I don't owe them anything. Why would I need to give compassion to them? And there's pride that enters our heart. And so we just pass by. I'm reminded, I saw recently the musical Les Mis that came through Spokane. And the opening, one of the opening scenes in this musical, the main character, Jean Valjean, has just got out of prison. And now he's on parole and he's trying to re-enter society, but he's really having a hard time finding work. And when he does find work, they pay him less than the others because of his past. And then he ends up getting in a fight and he gets injured. And so it's just like him against the world. He's mad at everyone. He's defensive against everyone. And into that setting, there's this priest who reaches out to him and says, come in. It's cold out there, you're weary. And so the priest invites him into his home, and the priest is being a good neighbor to him. And that night, in the middle of the night, Jean Valjean gets up and takes some of the priest's silverware, and flees with it. And he gets caught, and he's telling the cops, no, the priest gave this to me. It was a gift. And so they bring him back. Likely story. And they bring him back to the priest, and he's struggling and fighting. And they say, we found this man, and he took the silverware. He's saying it was a gift, but we've got your silverware back for you. And then the priest completely shocks Jean Valjean and actually comes to his aid. He's like, actually, this man has spoken true. It is a gift. He's like, but my friend, you left too early. He's like, you left the best behind. And then he walks over and he grabs the two silver candlesticks and he says, I gave these also. Would you leave the best behind? And the priest says to the cops, so this man has spoken true. It is a gift. You can release him. And so the cops leave. And the priest ends up saying, I want you to see in this some higher good. That the Lord is after you. And so Jean Valjean then goes through this kind of internal struggle, but there's a transformation that takes place. And he says, I'm going to die to that old me, and I'm going to become a new person. And it's through this priest's act of compassion that the trajectory of Jean Valjean's life is changed. And the priest could have easily said, this guy is antagonistic. This guy is undeserving. This guy is wounded. But the priest did for Jean Valjean, get this. The priest did for Jean Valjean what Christ did for us. What Christ did for us. So there's a couple ways I could preach this message. I could preach this message and I could heap on guilt for what it is that we're not doing. I could heap on guilt. And if you're like me, even just looking at this, you're already feeling some conviction. And I'm not trying to do away with conviction. There should be a little bit of a heaviness. And many of us do need to be awakened a little bit. We are living in such a way that we are the Levite passing by. So I'm not trying to get away from conviction, but I don't want the motivation for our change to be, well, the preacher made me feel bad enough, so I went and did something. That's short term, doesn't last, leads to disillusioned, burned out people. What I'd like for the motivation for our compassion to be is looking at who God is and seeing what he's done for us. Because Jesus is the neighbor who didn't pass by. We were the antagonistic ones. Remember what Romans said? While we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of his son. Instead of just stepping over our dying bodies, Christ himself said, no, I'll be the dying body on the cross for people who are antagonistic to me so that there can be salvation. He was extending his compassion. He did this for people who were broke. In fact, he identified with the broke people. Christ left heaven's riches and he became poor. Born to a poor family, living in a conquered nation. He became poor himself. In fact, when he died, he didn't even have clothing. He hung naked on the cross. Why? So that the poor might be made rich. That's what he did for us. He was the neighbor who didn't pass by those who were broke. He was a neighbor who didn't pass by those who were wounded. In fact, we see this. He came to earth and just physically, practically, he met the needs of those who were physically broken. He healed people. He raised people from the dead. And then ultimately, he himself was wounded and abused. Why? So that that day could come when he will wipe away every tear from every eye, and there will be no more sickness, and there will be no more pain. Jesus was the neighbor who didn't pass by at great cost to himself. He came down to earth and he entered into our world in a hostile territory so that he could extend compassion. And he came for those who were alone and he identified with those who were alone. When he died, he was deserted by his friends. He hung forsaken outside the city gate so that those who are alone could be adopted into his family and have family forever. That's who our God is. And when we begin to focus on that and keep telling ourselves the good news of the gospel and reviewing the beauty of who God is, it does something in your heart because you become what you behold. And when we behold Christ through the power of his Holy Spirit in us, something begins to shift so that increasingly we become like him. And he is the model for our compassion. He is the model for our mercy. He is the good neighbor that we strive to emulate. And we will, as a church, we have some coming opportunities to image Christ. We have some coming opportunities to reflect his compassion. I want to be careful that the entirety of this message does not get aimed just towards church programs, because you have people in your own lives that need a neighbor and it has nothing to do with Connection Point. So this doesn't all need to happen through the church, but I do want you to know that we're coming into a season as a church where it feels like the Lord is opening some doors for us to be the kind of neighbor that Jesus would have us to be. In October, we'll be hearing about a ministry called Refugee Relief, meeting the needs right now of some people over in Africa, some refugees. After the sermon and after we sing our closing song, we're going to hear today about a study that we're doing in our own neighborhood, in our own community, to uncover some needs and dreams of this community. I am on September 12th, I am going to a fundraiser for an organization called Paths to Life. And if this interests you, I have some handouts. It's going to be at the downtown public library. But Paths to Life is located down next to Planned Parenthood, and they're ministering to basically focusing on Christ-centered sexual wholeness. And so where there's been abortions or people considering abortions or people with unwanted same-sex attraction, they're jumping into this politically dangerous arena. And Christopher Yuan, great speaker, he's coming. Anyways, we're looking into what they're doing. And if you're interested in finding out more about that, that's a potential opportunity that may be coming down the road. And in October, on the 20th, we're actually going to have a special offering. We haven't done this for a couple years, but when we first got started at Brentwood, we had equipment needs, and then we also wanted to just take up an offering to give away to various needs. And we're going to do something similar in October, where we're going to take a special offering that's going to go a couple different directions. Part of it's going to go towards the cost that we're going to incur moving into Northwest Christian. Part of it's going to go to this refugee relief, and you'll be hearing more about that in October. In fact, the guy who started Refugee Relief is going to be with us that Sunday sharing in person. And then part of it will probably go towards some of the results from the study that you'll be hearing about a little bit later. The reason I'm telling you about this now is I'd like you to start budgeting for it. There's going to be some just financial opportunities where our church can make a difference. And this is not something that we're taking out of our normal tithes and offerings. This is something that's supposed to be above and beyond what we normally do. And so I'm giving you just a couple month runway so that you can start setting some money aside each month so that you are able to help with some of these financial needs as they come available. And I would like to kind of finish up today. Next week, we're going to talk more about what does it look like to be there for these people who need compassion. But I would like to invite you to start thinking now, what does it look like for you to build margin in your life for compassion? What's it look like for you to build margin in your life so that when you come across that body, you're not thinking, the whirlwind of my church and family has made it impossible for me to help. This is something that Angel and I have done. We actually sit down and we've talked about our week and we've made sure, okay, this is a certain night that we're not going to touch, that we're going to have available for time with people. We do the same thing with our finances, creating margin with our time, creating margin with our finances. If you don't do this, in most cases, you will not have the opportunity to step in the way you could when these opportunities make themselves available. So for Angel and I, we sit down with our budget. We figure out how much do we want to give, how much is going to go towards the church, and how much do we want to every month set aside for this is for the needs that come up. And then we have strove over our life to increase those amounts. For us, it means that we've taken on, we call it a capped lifestyle. And I'm not saying you have to do this exactly the way that we do it, but we've just decided that if in our lives we get better jobs that pay more, we're not changing our lifestyle. We're not going to put it towards a nicer car. We're not going to put it towards a bigger house. I'm not saying if you did that, that was wrong. I just want you to be thinking about this, because what we want to do is we want to be able to give more and more. So we're not going to have nicer and nicer vacations, nicer and nicer cars. One of my former pastors told us, like, you need to have a paradigm shift when it comes to money. When you see more money, instead of thinking more stuff, start thinking more souls. And it totally grabbed my heart. And it's been a really long journey and many battles, because I'm a very greedy person, but we're actually making progress. And so this is what I mean by building margin. We want to be able to be the people that can step in and give resources. We want to have time available. We want to have money available, but you have to be strategic. So start thinking about ways, have conversations with your spouse, what's it look like for you to build margin for compassion? Because if you don't build margin, by the time you get done with all your kids' programs and your vacations and your payments and all the extracurricular activities, you'll have no time left and you'll have no money left. If you really want to go after this, you have to do something like what we did, where we've limited the number of activities our kids can be in. We've limited the amount of dollars that we'll spend on personal extras so that we can have margin for compassion. And so that's where I would like to stop things today. I've created some awareness that neighbors who need a need. I'd like you to start thinking about what it look like to build margin in your life for compassion. And I don't mean just build more margin for the church. I'm not talking about that. I may never know some of the things that you're building margin for. In fact, a number of you are probably already doing things very similar to what Angel and I are doing. But start thinking, what's it look like to build margin? And then next week, we're going to talk more details about, okay, so what are some ways that we can demonstrate compassion, big picture ways? And then my brother-in-law, Dietrich, is going to share with us today about a community study that we're doing that might help us with more specific accuracy as a church find the specific needs that God is calling us to meet.